I'm Dream Queen in the cab with my friend Little Queen Trash Mouth.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for letting me come back again.
Thanks for being here. So, thank you listeners for staying tuned. On the agenda today is Letter from Birmingham Jail. In the context of the protests, the student protests that are being raided by militarized police in the United States at this time, I know that there are over 30 countries or something that mm-hmm. are joining in across the world.
I think it's all seven continents. I know that much.
Yes.
Even Antarctica.
Even Antarctica. Mm-hmm. There are people there?
Scientists. Like
other than military? Scientists.
Scientists.
Scientists know what's up. They know we can't continue to do this.
And they're on that front lines of, again, what is happening
right.
with this global warming pattern that, again, the U.S. military is like the number one climate emitter or carbon emitter. So, yeah, I would say they would have something to say.
So are we the number one carbon emitter because of the resources not only that we use and the emissions that come from the machinery and the bombs and the workings of creating these things and the mining to get the pieces and the uranium.
And shipping it everywhere
and
shipping troops everywhere and having bases stationed everywhere because
right.
those take energy to run.
Yes.
So,
yes.
yeah, that's, I think it's like the U.S. military is a bigger carbon emitter than like 20 different nations combined. I don't remember which ones they are, but that's a Googleable fact.
Yeah. I want to just drop in real quick and talk about just a very, very brief blurb. Speaking of the U.S. military and the failed foreign policy, that is not my quote. I was watching on Democracy Now! Last night, yesterday's broadcast from New York, and Amy Goodman and them, the good people who have been strong for very many years, covering the points that mainstream news won't. And Hala Rarit is the first diplomat to resign over the U.S. foreign policy in Gaza. Others are discussing resigning, but she's the first one to go with exactly that reason. And she sadly was disillusioned, apparently.
Yeah.
She thinks that this foreign policy is hurting America more than helping it. And she's witnessing a growing anti-American sentiment over there, you think?
Yeah.
Due to the what we're participating in, the money that we're giving, the actual weapons that we're just shipping over there. And it's hurting American interests. And President Biden, his dismissive attitude, she said, toward his constituency. I also want to tell you first, I have a clip. So when we're, and this is leading into what we're talking about with the student movements, because our president has blown it off and, mm-hmm. and was actually asked about it. And this is what he had to say.
Dissent is essential to democracy, but dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education. Look, it's basically a matter of fairness. It's a matter of what's right. There's the right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos.
To finish your classes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rack up that debt that I won't forgive, even though I promise to.
Yeah.
All of it. Just so disappointing.
So we're going to talk a little bit about what it means to dissent. And I was just talking about UCLA while you were outside and the chaos that ensued there and the lens in which it was portrayed. That the nonviolent protesters were not the ones that started the violence, that started the chaos, but counter protesters that are on the side of the U.S. military mm-hmm. Supporting the eradication of an ethnic group.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff was really scary. I don't know how many people saw footage of that, but these, quote, counter-protesters, or as I said yesterday, violent rioters. I don't even think it was beyond a counter-protest. Mm-hmm. It was an actual assault and
yes.
attack. were shooting, I mean, like heavy duty fireworks into these camps. Like, it was not, these videos are horrifying.
Yes. I did spend time last night watching footage from that. And I took some notes about what I saw and what was reported on. Mm-hmm. And the thing, these people, some of which were, reminded me of certain skinheads that I knew. Very large, very white, very bald. Some in, you know, yeah. the traditional, you know, they will not replace us khaki pants. Mm-hmm. Many wearing full face masks. Mm-hmm. And they descended upon the encampment with all kinds of weapons, no firearms that I could see. And we should touch on the fact that in New York earlier this week, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is looking into the fact that a NYPD officer discharged his weapon as they were clearing out mm-hmm. Columbia. Mm-hmm. And that's being investigated. So there are shootings of yeah. actual guns that are going. No one's been killed yet that I've heard yeah. of.
Although, I mean, they have shot students in the head with, quote, less lethal
right.
munitions.
Right.
Not right. even non-lethal, just less lethal.
Less lethal. I had to take notes on what I saw because I binged so much last night. I wanted to be prepared with some names and facts when mm-hmm. I came here today. I wanted to miss as little as possible. And I saw LA police officers in riot gear firing weapons, like projectile mm-hmm. weapon. I believe it was being said that they were rubber bullets into a haze of tear gas.
Oh, and behind blockades too. Yes. They couldn't see who was back there, how close, nothing.
No, yeah. No.
Yeah.
And so they were on one side of the barricade in at nighttime. The only lighting was coming from campus buildings. There is just, okay, Biden, there's chaos happening. People are running everywhere. And I watched this one officer go right up to the barricade, fire a firearm into the smoke, then move backwards and to the right into his crowd of police officers. Mm. And is just looking over, you know, like they can't see anything. And they're firing at people in the dark.
Mm-hmm. And I think there was something like when they first went in there, set off 20 flashbang grenades, like yeah. very
yeah.
quickly in succession. I mean, it's insane.
The Daily Bruin, which is the student newspaper at UCLA, posted an editorial. It was very brief. UCLA is complicit in violence inflicted upon protesters, failed to protect students. And there are some sentence fragments here. This is not me with the fragments, but it was written almost like a Twitter, like the quote that I saw was a pop out. It began with ear-piercing screams of wailing babies loudly emitting from speakers. Counter-protesters tearing down the brigades. Laser pointers flashing into the encampment. People in masks waving strobe lights. Tear gas, pepper spray, violent beatings, fireworks sparked at the border of the encampment, raining down on tents and the individuals inside. And that ends the quote. Apparently the assault lasted for hours yeah. and at least 15 people were injured. And that's from the quote, counter-protesters. Gail Teresa Johnson, who is a professor of African American Studies and Chicana Studies at UCLA, and is a member of the UCLA chapter of Faculty for Justice for Palestine. It was her perception that the UCLA campus police, the administration, and the LAPD sort of did let the attack
yeah.
from the mob happen. To do their work.
All the accounts that I've seen coming out of that encampment say the same thing.
Yeah.
That cops were nowhere.
Yeah. They showed up way later. And that way, you know, they kind of had some of the stuff done for them.
And this is all, I mean, I talked about this a little bit yesterday on my show yesterday morning, but it's just so, I mean, it's reminiscent to so many things throughout history, but really and truly, like, I just feel like we're right back in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Same election going on, mm-hmm. same mm-hmm. mass protester, peaceful protesters facing mass state violence,
mm-hmm.
and then actual violent threats to democracy they handhold right up to the gates, right? Like, it feels, I guess January 6th was technically 2021, but mm-hmm. for all intents and purposes, it was like still 2020, basically, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just all very familiar.
Yes, the fun never stops here in the United States. I'm going to pull up my tabs with some of the historical references on this subject. And while that's opening up, would you like to talk about where you want to start?
Well, I think we might have already started where I was starting, because again, just reading this, every line pretty much can be applied to what is happening right now in many different ways, right? Like, not just like this is still applicable to a Black Lives Matter movement, anyone fighting for reproductive justice. Like, this, again, it's across the board, still very much applicable to today. I guess if we're going to start with maybe some historical context, I really, in the piece that you sent me about the Birmingham campaigns, what's yes. going on right now. So it was basically, again, very similar to the BDS movement, right? Like, mm-hmm. boycott, divest, sanction. That's what BDS stands for. That this was a call to boycott segregationist stores, not shop during one of the busiest shopping seasons, et cetera, et cetera. Again, using a lot of direct nonviolent action to make a point. And I thought it was really interesting that, was it the Southern Christian, the SCLC?
Mm-hmm. And that's Dr. King and them's organization at the time that was formed to end segregation in the South.
But the sentence here where he's talking about involving students
mm-hmm.
in the movement
mm-hmm.
and then how watching students and young people be brutalized by police was actually a turning point for a lot of quote-unquote centrists.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was very interesting and parallel to what we're seeing now.
It's really wild to me because I feel like in memory, Dr. King, like, we can just remember him in the almost like an Elvis painting. Like, they have like the Dr. King Elvis painting of the like kind of fuzzy, out of focus, like floating mm-hmm. above, you know,
yeah, Vaseline on the lens.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and I just feel like there's that oval kind of picture that, you know, the grandmas would have, or, you know, the magnet on the fridge. But he was quite an extremist, mm-hmm. and he acknowledges, right, exactly. He's like, at first, in the letter from Birmingham jail, he says, at first I was offended to be called an extremist, and now I'm proud of it because I'm an extremist for love.
Yep.
And when you were talking about putting the kids out there, the idea when I was reading that paragraph, I was like, good Lord, y'all go throw the children in front. You're like, let's get the kids. Let's put them in front. They're not going to hurt the children. And I found that to be very, very, very risky
mm-hmm.
because what's happening is that there, and has been happening since the beginning of colonialism and imperialism, is a different valuation of life. So we're seeing it in Palestine right now and in Congo and all over Africa, but especially the child slavery that's going on in Congo. And it just does not matter. And I think the reason that the United States was able to get away, distance itself from what's happening in Congo, is because it's been put on the, in the laps, the blame's been put on tech companies.
Yeah.
But we're the ones that are allowing this to happen.
Who made corporations people?
Who
right?
made corporations people?
Yeah.
Who finances Rwanda enough to send M23 in there mm-hmm. and hold the order? Our National Security Administration and our CIA works for
mm-hmm.
politicians who work for companies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why divestment is really important, y'all, huge. Is because if you ever want to see the world a better place, we have to hit them in the dollars.
It's the only thing they care about.
So when you were talking about the framework of this letter, it was really interesting too, because this campaign was brought about because the law to desegregate was already passed, but organizations and companies weren't doing it. They still had signs up colored white for over a year. And we can get into that fact, that the timeline right here. Let's see, putting pressure on Birmingham's merchants. And then they were waiting for an election to happen. Mm-hmm. And people were like, hey, you know, why don't you let the new administration handle it? Hurry up and wait.
Yep.
And
again, sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to let the new administration handle it. That's the part.
Don't worry. We can push him left.
Yes. And did we do that?
No.
Right.
But I don't think we were supposed to. The centrists were. That's right. What they said.
Right.
We knew it couldn't be done.
Right. My copy of this letter is 21 pages, but it looks like you got the much smaller print. Right.
Mine is 6 pages.
Yeah. You want to read from yours? It's all the same. Yours is smaller. I was looking for the part where he starts to be really upset with centrists.
Okay, I have that.
I knew you would. You got it right at your finger. I got too many underlines, but I just thought it would be a really good time to just...
Well, there's two parts. Let's see. Well, there's the wait paragraph, which I have a lot of things underlined in. I'll just read a few of them. Sure. On the copy I printed out, this is on page 2.
Right. This is page 7 probably for me. Go ahead.
But so, I have never yet engaged in direct action movement that was, quote, well-timed according to the timetable of those who have not suffered unduly from the disease of segregation. For years now, I have heard the word wait. It rings in the ear of every Negro with a piercing familiarity. This wait has almost always meant never. It has been a tranquilizing thalidomide, relieving the emotional stress for a moment, only to give birth to an ill-informed infant of frustration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I skip a few sentences, but I guess it is easy for those who have never felt the stinging darts of segregation to say, wait.
Right.
I feel like a lot of us heard that 4 years ago. A lot of us heard that 8 years ago, right? When we were told it wasn't the time for a, quote, progressive candidate like Bernie. I mean, I'll put my opinions on that progressiveness aside for the moment. But mm-hmm. I've heard this my whole life every election. Now's not the time for a third party candidate. Now's not the time. Okay, well, when? Right? Like, again, to me, the same thing. This means never.
Oh, it's now.
Well, yes.
We know that.
Yeah, but like when other people are telling you now's not the time, it's never going to be the time for them because they're not affected. They want to maintain a status quo that they benefit from.
The unfortunate thing about America is that the theys are such a diverse group.
Mm.
And one of the things I wanted to throw out is the poor white supremacist needs to recognize what they're being used for. Yep. It's been very clear to me since I've known white supremacists. Okay. I've known some personally because I've been not that Negro to them. Right. And I've heard some rhetoric and philosophy, and they are just as confused as everybody else and misinformed and screwed up. And then they are put on the front lines.
Yep.
And not in the way of the children, but in the way of a military.
Yeah.
They are the American Gestapo. Those guys that were out there in the front on January 6th, those ones who are running into that camp, they out there breathing tear gas too.
Exactly. And even then, people who go overseas and serve come home with PTSD and then overdose on fentanyl. Again, we're all being sacrificed to that machine. And I actually am really glad you brought this up, because yesterday there was something that I wanted to touch on today, and I think you heard me.
I was like, what's she going to say? What?
And it was the House bill that right. you talked about in the first hour. Mm-hmm. If you look at this, people who voted no on that, it's absolutely insane, because it's like the squad and all the, quote, progressives, and then it's like Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, like the worst of the worst. And so to me, it was so interesting to see, like, I'm not saying that the worst of the worst voted no for the right reasons, But like, we are at this moment where you're seeing the quote extremists on either end. I don't think that leftist extremists are extreme. Right wing extremists are, but left wing, we're just like, we just want houses and healthcare, not that extreme. So what is interesting to me is all the moderate, like, it is like the extreme, quote, extremist versus the moderate right now, even in the House, which is like just very wild to see. There was another moment, I don't know which encampment it was from, but one of the student encampments, some MAGA hat wearing Let's Go Brandon guys showed up and started chanting the non-radio friendly version of Let's Go Brandon, right? Mm-hmm. We all know what that's a euphemism for. And then the students that they were like trying to troll by criticizing Biden start joining in and chanting, not again, not really Let's Go Brandon, but the other thing that it means that I can't say on the radio. Mm-hmm. And the MAGA protesters were like, wait, like their minds are just broken by the fact that like, oh, you don't like him either? Like it was just such a weird moment of like, yeah, no one's having the moderate right now.
No. I got two things I want to read. I have a cute little Venn diagram here, and it's Democrats and Republicans. And on the part that's way left, some stuff about abortion and pro-choice, and that's under Democrats. Acknowledge climate change, but do nothing about it. And then on the far right, Republicans. Some stuff about pro-life and guns, and then deny climate change. And that's pretty much where they diverge, according to this person's opinion. The things that the two parties have in common, total support for Israel, do Wall Street bidding, unlimited military spending, hostility to Russia, Iran, and China, full spectrum dominance, let money rule politics, neoliberalism rocks, spy on everyone.
Yes.
Screw the poor and old.
Yep.
Oligarchy, not democracy. Viva U.S. imperialism. Outlaw third parties. Crush the left. Regime change is cool. And it does seem, if you're looking at how people are voting right now, something else occurred to me, and I believe you and I talked about this on the show before, the idea that... it just flew right across. Like I saw the thought and it went. Oh, that a lot of the Democrats that are in the Senate right now or in the House are not actually left leaning Democrats.
Some They're of them aren't
Republican
even actual
plants, basically.
Yes, yes.
They run on one platform and then they vote a different way once
Talking
they
about
get
you,
it.
Kristen Sinema.
Uh-huh.
That's the Arizona lady.
Who else you got? I know there's a list.
Well, Joe Manchin. I mean, he's the big one. But Kristen Sinema is like the one who literally was like, living wage, and then just like went a complete 180 once she was elected.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, everybody knew this. They were like, she was just she's not seeking re-election. Like somebody paid her off to be this like spoiler candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she's not seeking re-election this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Surprise.
Right. Right. I'm surprised that Boebert is hung in, but I think she's the real deal as far as wackadoos are going. You know, like she's not faking that.
A genuine crazy person.
<She's> like the genuine article. So the other thing I wanted to on this vein is Dr. King's words. I must make two honest confessions to you, my Christian and Jewish brothers. First, I must confess that over the last few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in the stride toward freedom is not the white citizens counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says, I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I can't agree with your methods of direct action, who paternalistically feels that he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by the myth of time and who constantly advises the Negro to wait until a more convenient season. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will.
Yep.
Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection. I've felt that.
Yeah.
I've been around people who I know were just giving me lip service from their comfort. Yep. And then I, you know, I'll be, like I said, I've been close to skinheads and you know, other things that they would call themselves. You know, I'm a redneck. You're cool though, Jada. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But it's like, you know, being in these spaces, I'm like, I'd rather know where that cat mm-hmm. is coming from than somebody who's undermining me behind my back and just undoing all of the work I'm trying to do.
It's very similar to what Malcolm X said, too, about the, right, the Republican wolf will stab you frisson. I forget what it exactly is, but the Democratic fox stabs you in the back.
Mm.
And it's, I mean, that's pretty much the exact same thing as is being said here.
Mm.
But it's interesting. What's been really been interesting to me is, like, growing up in school and then actually just societally, we're taught that Malcolm X and Martin Luther King are so different, right? Oh, one was peaceful and did the right way. Don't be like Malcolm X, which is also brought up. Yeah, I was about to say,
let me find the page. Let me get the page.
But then you learn, like, they're actually not that, they're not different at all. They're saying so much of the same thing. We're doing, using so many of the same tactics. And again, we talked, I think, about last week how Malcolm X at the end of his life had come around to a more nonviolent.
Can we just adjust real quick?
Yes.
Not the end of his life.
So,
yes. Right before his assassination.
Before he was murdered. Yes. Right. Yes. It was not a natural end. Yes, 100%.
Contextualize that.
Before his life was cut short.
Right. Because I think that joining of what you're saying is one of the targets. They would have doubled if they, with these powers combined.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sorry. A little Captain Planet for you.
Captain Planet was a great show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I know some of y'all probably, you know, maybe you don't see the connection. I touched on it earlier and I'm going to say it again. A lot of people like to use the line, which is in this letter, and it came from Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from Birmingham jail. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So the Black movement, the civil rights movement of that Black people in America basically built and I was like, they did it. You know, the movement that they constructed to free ourselves from our own apartheid, from our own brutality of unjust killings and imprisonment. And again, King is writing this from solitary confinement in Birmingham jail. Is because Black people were the original testing group for most, if not all, of the brutality that is happening globally by U.S. imperialism. Okay? 1619, the Portuguese brought a ship with 19 Africans, somewhere in that number, to the United States and traded us for supplies. And that's how slavery in the colonies started, and they ran off with it. So let's just understand that if this is in a context of Black people's struggle, is because it's your struggle too, not just to free yourself as an oppressor, but they come in for you. They are here taking other people, and they're starting with your homeless and your poor. And your women,
mm-hmm.
all of it. So I wanted to talk about the outside agitator stuff. Lil Queen Trash Mouth is still here. Say hi.
Hello, I'm still here.
I want to read some stuff from here. Are you cool with that?
Absolutely.
All right. Actually, I'm gonna read from the beginning. I'm going to read the first paragraph because what I wanted to start is just the second paragraph. And I'm going to contextualize it for the people. And I'm going to try to go a little quickly. You can look up on the internet, letter from Birmingham jail. I encourage you to do so. August 1963. There's free PDFs all over the internet. While confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statement calling our present activities unwise and untimely. Seldom, if ever, do I pause to answer criticism of my work and ideas. Love this man. If I sought to answer all of the criticisms that cross my desk, my secretaries would be engaged in little else in the course of the day, and I would have no time for constructive work. Snap, snap. But since I feel that you are men of genuine goodwill and your criticisms are sincerely set forth, I would like to answer your statement in what I hope will be patient and reasonable terms. I think I should give the reason for my being in Birmingham, since you have been influenced by the argument of, quote, outsiders coming in. I have the honor of serving as president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, an organization operating in every southern state with headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. We have some 85 affiliate organizations all across the South, one being the Alabama Christian Movement for Human Rights. Whenever necessary and possible, we share staff, educational, and financial resources with our affiliates. Several months ago, our local affiliate here in Birmingham invited us to be on call to engage in a nonviolent direct action program if such were deemed necessary. We readily consented, and when the hour came, we lived up to our promises. So I came here, along with several members of my staff, because we were invited here. I am here because I have basic organizational ties here. Beyond this, I am in Birmingham because injustice is here. Just as the 8th century prophets left their little villages and carried their "Thus saith the Lord" far beyond the boundaries of their hometowns, and just as the Apostle Paul left his little village of Tarsus and carried the gospel of Jesus Christ to practically every hamlet and city of the Greco-Roman world, I too am compelled to carry the gospel of freedom beyond my particular hometown. Like Paul, I must constantly respond to the Macedonian call for aid. And here we go. Moreover, I am cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. Never again can we afford to live with the narrow, provincial, outside agitator idea. Anyone who lives inside the United States can never be considered an outsider. You deplore the demonstrations that are presently taking place in Birmingham, but I am sorry that your statement did not express a similar concern for the conditions that brought the demonstrations into being. I just want everybody to marinate on that. Last week, God, I can't even believe it was just last week.
I know.
Talking about the responsibility of the church. And I was, you know, calling people out to just basic things. Because people may ask me, what can I do, Jada? Like, you got to leave them on a high note, Jada. Tell me what I can do. And I've said over and over and over again, and I know that is first and foremost is hearts and minds. Minds. Educate yourself and open your heart. And then see what feels right for you to do from a place of finally grasping what is happening, you know? And if that looks like a phone tree, if that looks like dropping off a case of water and driving away down at UNM, if that means, you know, just treating people differently because that's like not centering yourself in a narrative, please stop centering yourself in the narrative. I'm going to let you say some things. We've got about 20 minutes before we give it over to DJ Barnacle. I do like what's going on the next bit about the 4 basic steps in a nonviolent campaign. You want to lead that?
Yeah, I'll read that part because I also like that part. So in any nonviolent campaign, there are four basic steps: collection of the facts to determine whether injustices are alive, negotiation, self-purification, and direct action. Again, I think this is what we are seeing with these encampment movements across the world.
Mm-hmm.
I follow the UNM encampment. I follow a lot of encampments, but the UNM one I'm following very closely because they're close proximity.
Yes.
But last night, as far as like the self-purification step goes, like they had an ACLU teach-in of mm-hmm. what are your rights, how to act in these situations. Like they are 100% on these marks of mm-hmm. like they're sharing literature. It's actually very sweet and lovely.
Yes, and very necessary because, yep. again, it's all framed in the we have to work from within a certain framework first and foremost as direct, nonviolent, direct action activists. The framework of the oppressor is very dangerous and wrought with pitfalls, and is also there double standards all over. And unfortunately, we have to operate within a certain amount of that. And then we need to know when to break the laws.
Yeah.
And during this time, Dr. King touches on the letters in his letter. People say, well, how can you break some laws and not others? And that's about knowing what is a just law and what an unjust law is. And so when we were talking about self-purification, it's about being knowledgeable about yourself and the people that you're with and what you're getting yourself into, and knowing that your cause is a just cause. And I just want to retouch on that first step, collection of the facts to determine whether injustices are alive. And these students are doing that.
Yep.
We're all doing that. And I've met with people this week who are like, I don't know what to believe. And then these, you know,
maybe not the media that's owned by a bunch of rich guys, or like two rich guys. It's not even a bunch of them.
Yeah. And you have to broaden your net. You know what I'm saying? And so folks are like, well, I don't do this and I won't look there and I don't do that and I only follow this. And it's like, well, then you're limiting the amount of information you can, because if you don't want to be on TikTok, if you don't want to be on Instagram, I don't want to be on Facebook, but you have to find a place where someone is showing you actual footage from
firsthand accounts. Yep. There's
many perspectives.
In some languages, they have a way of conjugating words mm-hmm. based on the evidence that the speaker has. So like there's a different conjugation for, I know this because I saw it. I know this because someone told me. I know this because it's like considered historic fact. But like they change. And I just wish so badly that our language had that capacity, because I think it would really change a lot.
Well, I think a lot of what's going on with colonialism and the effect on people's minds is the English language.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very tricky language. One word can mean opposite things.
Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So folks need to start thinking about that. And it's very hard to have a conversation with me. I really respect that you can do it. I appreciate you. That's why the people that I can have conversations with, I love y'all so much. Because I want to take apart every word. You know, I've just done it like four times in mm-hmm. this 45 minutes of, let's make sure we don't say end of his life and say before they killed him.
Yeah.
Because
no, words matter. Words matter.
These things that we're taught how to talk smoothly to somebody. It's a major skill set in America to know how to finesse the language.
Wasn't that a doc? Mm-hmm. Wasn't that a?
Yep.
In the American Dream, right?
Yeah, you know, and one before that, where it's like it's okay to steal as long as you know it's embezzlement and not stealing. You know what I mean? It is a total manipulation of language. Running short on time here, but I'd like to cover a couple of other points, like you may well ask why direct action, why sit-ins, marches. You have that part highlighted down there. Isn't negotiation a better path? And King says, you're exactly right in your call for negotiation. Indeed, this is the purpose of direct action. Okay, and this is the part that I want people to understand. Nonviolent direct action seeks to create such a crisis and establish such creative tension that a community that has consistently refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. It seeks to dramatize the issue that it can no longer be, so that it can no longer be ignored. I just referred to the creation of tension as a part of the work of the nonviolent resistor. This may sound rather shocking, but I must confess that I am not afraid of the word tension. I have earnestly worked and preached against violent tension, but there is a type of constructive, nonviolent tension that is necessary for growth. Just as Socrates felt that it was necessary to create tension in the mind so that individuals could rise from the bondage of myths and half-truths to the unfettered realm of creative analysis and objective appraisal, we must see the need of having nonviolent gadflies to create the kind of tension in society that will help men to rise from the dark depths of prejudice and racism to the majestic heights of understanding and brotherhood. So the purpose of direct action is to create a situation so crisis-packed that it will inevitably open the door to negotiation. We therefore concur with you in your call for negotiation. Too long has our beloved Southland been bogged down in the tragic attempt to live in monologue rather than dialogue. And that is the Biden quote. Yep. That is what is happening here.
College campuses.
They wanted to move some of these encampments to areas that would get no attention. You can protest, but protest over there.
In the free speech zone.
In the free speech zone. Because you are agitating people. Well, guess what? That's the point. We are here too. We are agitators, but we are not outsiders.
Yeah.
We are a part of this earth. We are a part of this country. Our money, our labor pays for it.
Yeah.
So what about May 2nd? Did you hear about the labor and student organizations that put on a big event in Manhattan? Protesting and having a solidarity with Palestine, and we're doing the workers. They went on strike. It was a general strike out there.
Oh, nice, beautiful.
Yeah.
Do they start on May 1st?
Second.
They start on the 2nd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Yeah.
I know that in that vein of labor organizing support or labor unions supporting these college and campuses that. Two university unions, UCLA and USC, have filed unlawful labor violation suits against both of those colleges due to the police reaction. So, I mean, again, this is the point, to create the creative tension, right? Like, things have gotten to a point that they can't be ignored anymore. And now people are taking organized legislative action.
And I think this is one of the reasons why, why not just for wages and a shorter workday, but the consolidation of voices and bodies when it comes to unions. There have been work stoppages all around the world, people blocking the shipment of arms. And I think the pot is just boiling over.
Yep.
I just want to touch on segregationist thinking. And what I am trying not to look very hard at, but I know it needs to be looked at. That's why I'm looking away. And that is, why are people so much into saving Palestine when we got so much other people hurting? And like I said, it's the pot boiling over and the visibility. Because sadly to say, a lot of the people in Sudan and in Congo are not out there with cell phones. Right. They also don't have the kind of solidarity that Palestinian people, you know, have in sympathetic Israeli people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have certain people next door with resources who are willing to see what's going on and join your cause, then your voice can be amplified. And so I sit and I think, why the light-skinned brown people? And that's always the question, and it can divide us when the immigrants of dark-skinned people are coming here and being beat up and pushed back out. But it really is about your proximity to journalists. God rest all of their souls. More journalists have been killed by Israel and Palestine right now. More Palestinian journalists have been killed than ever.
Than, I think, yeah, the last ever. Five wars combined.
Yeah, ever, yeah. In wartime.
Yeah.
So they are trying, with House Bill 6090, they are trying to silence his voice even further. And the literal meltdowns that senators are having over TikTok.
Yeah.
The literal meltdowns that they're having over the amplification of suppressed voices is enough to tell you that it's important.
Yep. Yeah, they don't work this hard to squash things that aren't effective. Mm-mm. I think I read there was a meme that, or not a meme, but a tweet that I reposted on Instagram, whatever you call that, mm-hmm. that was talking about, like, we can't have protests aren't effective and we must squash them with all force necessary. Those can't exist in the same world because it's clearly hypocritical, right? Like,
yeah.
So all of this reaction is because these protests are working.
Well, I guess we should just start saying
there's some hope.
There are. No, it's hopeful. It's just exhausting.
Yeah,
I mean, and you know, what does he say here? Oppressed people cannot stay oppressed forever. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of great takeaways from this. We know through painful experience that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded mm-hmm. by the oppressed. History is a long and tragic story of the fact that privileged groups seldom give up their privileges voluntarily. Okay? Mm-hmm. One more. I got one more. The nations of Asia and Africa are moving with jet-like speed toward the goal of political independence, and we still creep at horse and buggy pace toward the gaining of a cup of coffee at a lunch counter.
Yep.
Oh, my man.
It all still applies. He had some
zingers, boy. I know. And they're all still. And that's the part where I'm like, so is it wrong? Like, I'm not trying to. We got to go. But I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's been going on so long. So why not just blow them all up? And so then I'm not going to read from the black separatist. He was calling out the black nationalists. You know, but he was saying that I can see.
I understand why people are getting pushed that way, much like the anti-American sentiment that's being sowed now, right?
Right.
Like, we are reaping what we sow, right?
Well, it's and it's going to have to be a responsibility for people to understand that if we want a better world, then you got to change your mind about who's important and who's not, because everybody's important. And what is your fair share? You need to think about that too. You can't be going around talking about your fair share is this, because I said this last week. You can see it on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm like, everybody Google elite panic and the UC Berkeley monopoly study, and then tell me that rich people earn anything.
Wish you would put your stuff on the internet.
Would
you record it so that I could put it on the internet?
Maybe. I'm going to get a voice changer.
Okay.
I'm always sounding like the scream mask in here.
They can't get us all. They can't get us all.
Especially if we don't pay taxes.
All right, Lil Queen Trash Mouth. You can listen to her on the Hatch Attack Hours on Fridays from 10 to noon. And I appreciate you for coming on the Confused American Show.
Thank you for having me.